10-3928. And is it Mr. Baragri?
It's Mr. Baragri.
Baragri, okay. You may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the Court, my name is Andy Baragri, and I represent Defendant Appellant Rigoberto Molina. Mr. Molina's conviction should be reversed because Mr. Molina was prejudiced by two errors committed by the District Court that affected his right to a fair trial. First, the District Court abused its discretion by giving Jury Instruction 19 because it impermissibly reduced the government's burden to prove an essential element of the charged crime by suggesting that the admitted evidence was sufficient to convict. Second, the District Court abused its discretion by admitting into evidence Call 361, which contained unfairly prejudicial and minimally probative evidence of uncharged drug activity as well as violent character evidence in violations of Federal Rules of Evidence 404B and 403. I'd like to first address Jury Instruction 19. Mr. Molina was charged with four counts of knowingly and intentionally possessing with intent to distribute a controlled substance. Now, to sustain a conviction for possession with intent to distribute, the elements are clear that the defendant needs to knowingly or intentionally possess a mixture containing a controlled substance. So an essential element of the charged crime is that the substance that was in the possession of the defendant was actually a controlled substance. The jury was instructed as to the general elements of the charged crime, as well as the equal weight to be given to the circumstantial and direct evidence, and finally as to the burden of proof as to the government's case. Over Mr. Molina's objections, the jury also was instructed, as Jury Instruction 19 stated, the government is not required to introduce into evidence the controlled substance allegedly possessed by the defendant to sustain a conviction for counts charging possession of a controlled substance with intent to distribute. Because this instruction states as a general principle that the controlled substance need not be introduced into the evidence, it impermissibly suggests that whatever evidence the government has submitted as to that essential element of the charged crime is sufficient. And by doing so, Jury Instruction 19 impermissibly reduces the government's burden to prove an essential element of the charge.
I guess I'm confused on that because elsewhere the court did instruct that one of the elements that the government had proved was possession with intent, possession beyond reasonable doubt, right?
Correct.
So that element was instructed to the jury. How does the Instruction 19 lessen that burden? I don't see that.
Your Honor, the reason that it lessens that is that when, obviously, jury instructions are viewed as a whole to determine whether they're complete and accurate. However, as this Court has found in previous decisions, and in fact inherent in one of the supplemental decisions that was filed by the government here, instructions can be unnecessary. And even though there is a correct statement of law, if an instruction is not necessary, it might tend to mislead or confuse the jury as to the government's burden of proof. So even though the burden of proof has been instructed generally, that still might be confusing.
Well, it's more than generally, though, here, because an element instruction was given requiring the government to prove each of those elements, which included possession of a controlled substance,
I agree.
Which incorporates the beyond a reasonable doubt burden, right?
I do agree, yes. So the jury was instructed that they were to find each of the elements of the charged crime beyond a reasonable doubt. The argument here is that because Instruction 19 was not justified for any particular reason in the trial, the giving that instruction to the jury might mislead a jury into believing that the government's evidence that's been introduced as to that particular element was sufficient. So if there was any doubt in a juror's mind that additional evidence was needed, that they weren't fully convinced as to this essential element, Instruction 19 improperly tips the scales in favor of the government by suggesting that whatever evidence they didn't put into evidence is not consequential. The government essentially, at the district court, the government relied on several cases from this court, Manganellis, Murray, Blanton, other cases that state as a general principle that other circumstantial and direct evidence of the controlled substance may be sufficient to prove that the essential element of the charged crime. However, there are several reasons why those cases do not support giving Instruction 19. First, those cases don't cite as a general principle that the controlled substance need not be introduced. Second, they do not go to the issue of whether it's proper to instruct the jury that the government need not introduce a controlled substance. And finally, as stated more fully in the brief, the conspiracy cases that are cited by the government are not persuasive authority in a possession with intent to distribute case, because an essential element of the in a conspiracy case, the controlled substance is not an essential element of the crime.
I guess here's my problem. Even if that was incorrect, I mean, even if that was error, and even if admission of this 361 call was error, in light of the evidence that was presented here, the fact that Sanchez and Osorio testified, they're the ones who said they sold the cocaine, sold Molina the cocaine, the testimony of the agents, the surveillance photos, the phone calls that were recorded. I mean, the evidence was pretty overwhelming. So the question is, what's the harm if we even give you that both of those were errors?
Your Honor, I respectfully disagree that the error was harmless here. First, on the issue of Instruction 19, this Court has found numerous times, and Turcotte and Byrd and other decisions cited in the briefs, that if indeed the burden of proof was reduced as to an essential element, in this case controlled substance, then that is not harmless error. That warrants reversal. Getting into Call 361, which you have raised, while the evidence here was significant, I would disagree that it was overwhelming. Just as a contrast, in a recent decision in this case of this court in Powell, what was found to be overwhelming evidence of a drug transaction was quite a bit greater than what we have here. Instead of just having the recorded phone calls and the testimony of the alleged dealer, in that case there was also a videotape of the transaction, testimony of the confidential government informant, as well as a jail cell confession from the defendant. So in terms of the spectrum of what is overwhelming evidence, I would disagree that the evidence here was overwhelming. Furthermore, on harmless error, this Court has found that the government's burden in the harmless error analysis is not to show merely that the evidence introduced could have supported a conviction, but that it would have supported a conviction absent the errors. And we would submit that on both of the issues being raised here, that had there been had the jury not been improperly given Instruction 19, and had Call 361 not been introduced into evidence, the government would not be able to satisfy that harmless error test of showing that the jury would have convicted absent those errors.
I know trial counsel made some objections when there was a discussion about the Call 361, but when the transcript itself was offered, was there an objection made?
No, Your Honor. When the transcript was introduced into evidence, there was no objection made.
So isn't there a forfeiture there?
I disagree, Your Honor, that there was a forfeiture there. I don't. The cases cited by the government in their brief on appeal do not. There's no case that's been cited from this district or from this court where, after two failed objections, two overruled objections, specifically upon the introduction of the evidence through testimony, that it's then a requirement that defense counsel object for. In this case, it was actually a fourth time when the exhibits were actually introduced into evidence, or in this case, the recorded phone calls. The objections here were pretty clearly on point. The very first instance where the uncharged transaction was introduced into evidence, Mr. Molina's trial counsel objected. He was overruled at sidebar, objected again upon the second introduction, and furthermore, a third objection was made on the next phone call. And additionally, Your Honors, Mr. Molina's trial counsel did raise this issue in the motion for a new trial. I see that in rebuttal time, I'd like to save the remainder of my time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Frimpong?
May it please the Court, my name is Nana Frimpong, and I represent the government. The government rests on its brief on the issues of forfeiture and waiver and submits that the district court did not commit plain error, let alone abuse its discretion in informing the jury that the government was not required to introduce into evidence the physical drugs that formed the basis of the charged transaction. Instruction number 19 was a correct statement of the law, and the language of the instruction in no way implied that the evidence submitted by the government was sufficient to support a conviction. The government is not required to introduce the actual controlled substances into evidence. This is a fact defendant concedes. And this is so because Manganiellus and its progeny clearly established that the identity of a controlled substance can be proved through circumstantial evidence. Now, jury instructions are reviewed as a whole and in the context of a proceeding in which the jury was reminded, as Your Honor did reference, by the judge, defense counsel, and by the government, of the government's burden of proof. It cannot be said that failing to restate that burden of proof immediately after instruction number 19 would somehow render that instruction incomplete or misleading. The trial judges are afforded significant discretion to formulate jury instructions, and in the context of this proceeding, the adoption of instruction number 19 was well within their discretion. The district court also properly admitted call 361 as direct evidence of the charged February 26, 2008 transaction. And the admission of that call, the fact that the reference was made to a cocaine transaction and the suggestion that the defendant was contemplating an issuing a threat to a non-paying customer did not render the admission of that call an abuse of discretion. Indeed, defendant has conceded in his papers that the contemplated threat was direct evidence of the charged transaction. Even if the challenged portions of the call were proffered as 404B evidence, they would still have been properly admissible. And even for the sake of argument, there was any error in admitting call 361, as Your Honor has observed. It was not reversible error, since it cannot be said that the challenged evidence made the prosecution's case significantly less persuasive. There was indeed overwhelming evidence of defendant's guilt provided through the actual phone conversations between defendant and his two suppliers, the corroborating testimony of those suppliers, the surveillance evidence, and importantly, defendant does not contest the other post-February 26, 2008 calls, which provide strong evidence in conjunction with the corroborating testimony of Sanchez that defendant committed the charged offense. And finally, there is no cumulative error here because defendant has identified no errors. So for the foregoing reasons, unless there are any further questions, we respectfully request that the court affirm defendant's convictions.
I know you said you would rely on your brief on the waiver and forfeiture subjects, but your opposing counsel is correct, isn't he, that there was a pretty full argument on call 361 prior to the offer of the transcript?
I think it's correct, Your Honor, that there was full discussion of there was an objection made. However, the objection...
And it focused on... part of the focus of that objection was on the threat information in call 361, and there was really no surprise to you that the defense objected to that particular part of the call.
In fact, no. The threat aspect was only raised on appeal. That was something that was not at all objected to in the district court. The objection was with respect to subsequent acts that appeared irrelevant and other bad acts. And the district court issued what was essentially a provisional ruling and indicated, as Your Honor did point out, that, it did indicate to defendant that they were under the obligation to raise the objection if they felt that the proffer offered by the government to support the relevancy of the call proved to be inconsistent with the testimony that was given. At the end, as Your Honor did point out, at the end of the testimony, when the district court specifically asked defendant if he had an objection to the transcripts, he said that he did not.
Thank you.
There are no other questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
How much time does he have? 2 minutes.
I'd like to just respond to three specific points that the government made in their argument. First, as the last question that was raised as to whether the objection was sufficient, the representation that this was a conditional objection I think is belied by the record. There was a pretty clear overruling of both objections as to the evidence and as to the idea that Mr. Molina did not follow through in objecting after it was suggested by the government that the evidence would be as to the February 26th transaction. It was specifically after that proffer that Mr. Molina objected to the evidence again. The second issue I just want to clarify is that on jury instruction 19, Mr. Molina is not arguing that the burden of proof needs to be restated. That's something that was misconstrued in the government's response brief. Mr. Molina's argument is that Instruction 19 was unnecessary, inappropriate, should not have been given at all. Certainly there are other formulations of Instruction 19 that could have been given that would have reduced the prejudice, but that was not the argument at district court. It's not the argument on appeal. And finally, I want to discuss the statement that Call 361 constituted direct evidence of the charged crime. Again, this is an issue that the government avoided in its response brief. Certainly, there was certain probative evidence within the context of Call 61, but what the government has consistently ignored is that its burden on 404B is to only submit the evidence to the extent that it is probative. And here we're dealing with select portions of the call that could have been redacted. And this court has found in the Ostrowski and Lewis decisions and other decisions from this court that when there's an opportunity to redact inappropriate other bad act evidence, that's a burden of the government to do that. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel, for your argument. Your briefing will take the case under advisement. The court will stand in recess until the next sitting of the court. Okay. And thank you, counsel, for your efforts. Thank you. We really appreciate everything that you do and the fact that you're willing to take this appointment. Thank you, dear.